Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so what a summit, right? Huge thanks to everyone who joined us in person. We've been at full capacity, which means over 70 people in the room. Speakers and staff had to stand for lack of chairs for most of the event, which was fine. We didn't really have time to sit down most of the day, running around between the stage, the back, constantly engaging in conversation with all of you awesome people. I think Emil specifically spent more time outside the room giving advice and answering questions. He was very much in demand, as always. We had about 50 people this time in the streaming room too, with some very insightful conversations and questions being floated to the speakers from there. Speaking of speakers, see what I've done there? We had the usual suspects, of course, Blanca, Tracy, Anton, Emil, and myself. An unexpected guest appearance from former JREP member and Akia Hunter Matt Ketchum, who joined us on the Q&A panel, and whose beard is looking more and more impressive by the month. All of us doing what we normally do, and our two new guest speakers as well, Joey Stockermans from Akia Mart, who rocked the house with some eye-opening insights gleaned from the platform since its launch. And the biggest surprise of the day, for me at least, Daigo Sato-san, who I hope from this day onwards will be our resident accounting expert. His knowledge, tips, tricks were all worth their weight in gold and then some. So amazing stuff all around. The after party as well rocked, of course, and some of us kept the drinks and conversations flowing after the event as well. I barely remember how I got home that evening, to be honest. Managed to leave my PC on the taxi, which I took from the station, and was fortunate enough to be able to collect it from the local police station the next morning, because Japan. Then I arrived back in Fukuoka completely exhausted, but thoroughly satisfied, as I hope you all did. So huge thank you again to all of you. I hope to see even more of you next time. I think we'll definitely go for the two-day event from next time onwards, and that'll give us the option for an even bigger, nicer venue, hopefully, as well as to keep expanding the speakers list, introduce those hands-on deal analysis and workshop sessions that you keep asking us for, and much, much more. So watch this space, and also watch it for the presentation videos and downloadable slides, photo gallery from the day, and all other content, which will most likely be ready for you in about 2 weeks' time. All right, so back to work. For today's episode, here's an audio conversation with a super savvy Australian investor based in Okinawa. The kind of people I like talking to the most, savvy investors, I mean, not specifically Australians, although we Aussies do rock. And we talk a lot about some of the basic stuff related to investing in Japan, where and what to buy, differences between various types of properties, building materials, qualifying for investment loans, borrowing capacity, but also more specific stuff like catering to foreign tenants and pet owners, the capacity for increasing rents in the face of stagnant salaries and rising cost of living, how much to set aside for maintenance purposes if you own an entire building, condos, owner unions, and also a bit about us at NTI, how we work, how we source deals for our clients, that sort of thing. So really nice, comprehensive chat. Enjoy it, and I'll see you again on the other side. Okay, so I'll switch off my camera as well so that we'll have better quality, and then let me just quickly review your email because I have no memory of any kind. Give me a second.
So you're looking at a portfolio investment properties in Japan, niches and advice, 700K over the course of the next 2 years. Goals are 6% yield and up, meeting loan requirements. I see what you mean. You already have a GK set up with a bank account ready to go and you reside in Okinawa. Okay, so I'll break that down one by one. First off, when we say 6% yield, just so we're on the same page, are you referring to gross, net before tax? What were you thinking?
Net before tax.
Net before, okay. So that's doable with smaller wooden buildings of under 5 floors. I'd say under 4 floors. So 6 floors and over would require an elevator. 5 floors and under, you don't need one, but it'd be hard to tenant the 4th and 5th floors.
Okay.
So if we focus on buildings that are up to 3 floors, most of them would be wooden structures, but occasionally we might find something concrete. Or on individual mansion units, then 6% is doable, not much over. I mean, at best, we've been seeing 6.5% in the last 3-4 years.
Okay.
And that would be naturally out of Tokyo, Central, Osaka, and so forth.
All right. That's exactly where I'd want to invest in places. We intend to live in Tokyo, Greater Tokyo. So places that are sort of around that area, you know, within like 1 or 2 hours by car would be good.
Is this because you want to do maintenance and stuff yourself or for any other reason?
Just being,
You know that when a property is tenanted in Japan, you can't enter it. There's no periodical inspections or anything of that sort.
You know what? I mean, I guess it doesn't matter. I guess I haven't bought property before, so I just assumed that I should be, you know, not that far away from it.
Only if there's any advantage, if you're the DIY type and you want to try and fix things yourself. Otherwise, I wouldn't say so. I mean, if and when it becomes vacant and you want to go and have a look at a vacant unit, you could, but you could go anywhere in the country. I mean, there's places that would be potentially that yield around Tokyo, like Saitama City, Chiba City, maybe suburban Yokohama, if we're lucky. Other cities, it would be a bit, I guess not. I mean, Fukuoka City is an option, and Nagoya, although the tenants are a bit more blue collar there. So occasionally you have kind of Middle East cancellations or late payments and stuff. Sapporo works, but we want to aim for slightly higher yield if it's Sapporo because we want to cover the lengthy vacancies during the winter and the higher maintenance costs for heating equipment and such. Kobe City, suburban Osaka. There's a bunch of places, but yeah, we can focus on Chiba, Saitama, and Yokohama if you want.
Yeah, the types of units. You've already said buildings. You reckon?
It's easier to get yields that are 6-6.5 if you own the entire structure, and there are no monthly fees. But it's because the structural maintenance is all going to be on you, it's a better idea to set, I'd say, let's say 10% of the net income aside just for renovations and repairs and whatnot. Or maybe if we buy it super new, not in the first 10 years, but eventually.
And the buildings we're talking about would be full of like 1Ks, 1DKs kind of thing?
Yeah, occasionally we'd find something, especially if it's 3-4 floors. Sometimes the third floor is more of a family-sized unit or two and the rest are smaller. If we can find something with mixed sizes, it just gives us more tenant diversity, which is not bad. But most of them would be 1K, 1R. But also the advantage of buying a smaller building, which is normally going to be 20 years and younger, is that they're designed a bit more modernly, sometimes with lofts, more light into the apartment. It just attracts a better kind of tenant, like young professionals, couples, as opposed to just destitute pensioners kind of thing.
Yeah,
which is what you'll get a lot with the older mansion rooms.
Okay, so you want a variety of rooms in the building, not just a bunch, not just all 1K.
If possible, that's not always the case. But if the building is young enough and nice enough, then even if it's all 1Ks or 1Rs, you'll always have tenants. I mean, it's nice to diversify if we can, but the If we can, because most of the buildings, I'd say maybe 20% of them would be mixed size. Most of them would be just that 1R, 1K, 1DK kind of.
Okay. The you said wooden structure. And under 20 years?
In most cases, yeah. We've recently looked at some on behalf of another customer. So you could get up to 3-4 floors, concrete structures for that budget, but they would be much older. So they would be closer to 30-40 years. Well, I mean, generally speaking, I'd say concrete is better, but that's comparing at the same age. If you're talking about 30-40 years, if eventually you want to demolish and get dispose of the building and build a new one, that's very expensive with a concrete build. So probably, so I mean, we can look at both.
A wooden build is easier to tear it down and put up something new.
Much cheaper, yeah. I mean, the building, the rebuilding is the rebuilding regardless, but yeah, demolishing and disposal is a lot more expensive. We're talking 10 to 15 million for a concrete build, whereas it's more like 3 to 4 or 3 to 5 million for a wooden build.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Interesting to know. And how many, so you reckon I could get, with my budget, how many buildings do you reckon I could get?
Two wood ones or one older concrete one, I would assume, especially at current US dollar to yen rates. Have you locked them in? Have you transferred them into Japanese yen, your funds?
I have some synthetic yen longs.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. Some synthetic.
So that works out to be about 105, 104 million at current rates. So that could potentially get you to smaller wooden buildings or, yeah, one big concrete building, but that would most likely be a bit older.
Okay. Now, if you've been following this podcast for a while, and in particular our JREP sessions, you're probably more than familiar with Blanka Kobayashi of Arc Reform. They're a bilingual renovation company serving clients in the Kanagawa and Kanto area. So Tokyo, Chiba, Saitama, Kawasaki, Yokohama. They can handle simple, small scale projects as well as full house renovations. And they will work with you on the perfect design for your dream family home. But not only homes, Arc Reform also handle commercial property renovations, offices, restaurants, bars, shops, you name it, from traditional classics to the latest trends in interior design and renovations. So you want to email them for a free consultation and quote at info@arcreform.com. That's A-R-K reform, all one word, .com, and give your home or commercial space the love and care that it deserves.
Okay. Other thing I wanted to discuss was maybe what do you think of pets?
We, as a personal choice, we always allow our tenants to have pets, but it's very much a personal choice. It's definitely an in-demand asset. If you do advertise that you're pet-friendly, you'll broaden your tenant base.
Yeah.
And you can charge... your tenants would normally have a guarantee company in the vast majority of cases. So even if the pets cause some extra damage, that should be covered. In cases where you're accepting a tenant who cannot get a guarantee company, for example, a Japanese citizen who's just returned to Japan and doesn't have an income history yet, or foreign students, or whatever the case may be, then we'll just charge them, instead of 1 month security deposit, we'll charge them 2 months because they've got a pet.
And can we charge them a bit more?
We can try, but they wouldn't always agree to it or be able to afford it.
Okay.
But the guarantee company is the best security in any case. If we can get that, that's always the better one. Because they will cover up to 3 months of missing or absconded rents. And if for any reason you have to unilaterally terminate a lease, let's say you got a foreign student who just disappeared and moved back to their home country, that could take up to a year to get a court order to terminate the lease from your end. And their guarantee company will keep paying rent until that order is granted. So that's definitely the better security to go for if we can.
Okay. And for pet-friendly apartments, do you reckon the market...
Sorry, let me just close the window. There's some truck pulling over here, which is horribly noisy. Arigatou motokusan. Sorry, go ahead.
So for pet-friendly apartments, do you reckon you can get better, like if you had a room and you rented it out, or if you had an apartment and you rented it out for XYZ dollars, do you reckon you could get a little bit more than XYZ dollars if you put pet-friendly on the listing?
Slightly more, yeah. It's definitely, again, it's an asset which is in demand. Not a lot of landlords allow it, so you could definitely charge a bit more for that. Whether it's going to be 5,000 yen more or 10,000 yen more, I don't know. That's up to the property managers in each area to tell us.
Okay. How much would you say would it increase the yield, say? Would it increase the yield by 10% or 5% or 20%?
I'd say you... So if we're talking about 6%, probably up to, let's say, 0.5% over. So yeah, you can call it 5%-ish.
Okay.
0.5%, maybe 1% if we're lucky. I don't know. Again, each area is different. If there's a particular area with a lot of pet-friendly apartments, then we're not going to be able to charge much more.
Mm. Yeah, because that's another idea I was thinking for the portfolio. Is instead of buying a building, just buy mansions. Or yeah,
but then it's not up to you to be pet friendly. That's the owner union deciding, not you.
Oh yeah, okay.
And most of them do not allow pets.
So even the owner of the unit can't make that decision.
No, same as you can't decide if you're part of an owner union. You also can't decide if you're allowing commercial leases. For example, a lot of time we would be happy to accept, like, you know, not a shop or a restaurant with walk-in traffic, but something like a lawyer or an accountant or a hairdresser who sometimes rent a normal residential unit to work in.
Yeah.
If the owner union doesn't allow that, you can't do that either, which is another advantage of owning the entire structure yourself. Plus, you can, you know, you can be even more flexible and experiment with the monthly stays or short-term stays or whatever the case may be.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right, that's enough. That's good to think about. Because one idea I was thinking was just accumulating a portfolio of units that were sort of inside Tokyo and target and that were pet friendly, and then get a portfolio of those, and then I'd run my own listing site.
I mean, we can definitely target specifically pet-friendly buildings. I mean, pet-friendly owner unions. There's not heaps of them out there, but there are quite a few. Mm. So that's an option. But then,
and then I'd put up a website, like Tokyo Pet Friendly or something, or some other name.
Yep.
And then put all the portfolio up on that. And then if that seemed to be getting a bit of traffic, I could bump the yield maybe by about 5 or 10%.
Yeah, and if you're doing your own channels and you're appealing to foreigners, just by virtue of them being foreigners, you can already bump the rent up a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, right? I mean, if I can, I'd like to use my skills to sort of bump things up a bit. I'm not exactly a DIY handyman kind of guy, but I do know how to make stuff on the internet, you know.
It's definitely an option, but in that case, we'll need to make sure that we're using a property manager who can service tenants in English. There's in Tokyo specifically, that's not an issue.
Yeah.
Other cities, it's a bit of hit and miss.
Okay. Yeah. What do you think of that? Do you reckon that's a good idea?
I love it personally, but we're pet people ourselves, so.
Yeah, we've got a cat. Probably going to get a dog soon. We just had our first baby about 10 months
Congrats.
Ago. Thank you.
Yeah, we've just purchased a building ourselves, and the first thing we did is put it out there as pet friendly. Like, it's just the right thing to do, I think, in a country like Japan.
Right, because as they, it seems like if they're not having kids, they're definitely buying cats.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, just to continue with your email, on the topic of the loan,
yeah.
It's not exactly against the assets in Japan. It's more against, so you know how, I'm not sure if you've delved into owner-occupied properties, but in Japan, there's no leveraging against the property, or, I mean, the property is obviously a kind of collateral, but there's no leveraging against equity accrued in the property or anything of that sort. Your borrowing capacity is strictly calculated on the amount that you lend in income every year.
Yeah, I've been watching some of your videos, and that's one of the things I heard, hey, that you're lending, the amount you can borrow is determined by your monthly yield.
Correct. So the investment properties are kind of similarly calculated from that aspect, is not exactly how much is the building worth, but how much is your total portfolio generating in investment income, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not exactly equivalent to what you're used to from overseas. It's not exactly equivalent to what you you'd get overseas, and it also is a matter of who is. So you say you've got a GK incorporated. Has that company been generating any income so far?
No, it's just created.
Okay, so do you have any previous property management or asset investment experience that you can show them as a business plan?
I made most of my money speculating on digital assets.
Okay. So, it's definitely an option, but it will be more of an option once the company is actually generating any previous income. So maybe first, especially if you're going the mansion route, then first few properties purchasing cash, show them that you're doing it well and you're generating income and it's a good investment, and then they'll be a lot more open to it.
Okay. So if going down the mansion route, the units inside mansions, I'd assumed I'd have to buy the first bunch in cash. And then how long do you reckon it'd be if they're occupied pretty quickly after buying them, or if they're already occupied after buying them, would it maybe take about like 6 months before I could start getting leverage?
I'd say more a year to 2 years.
Okay.
That's one thing. The other thing is, if you're going for buildings, maybe the first building in cash. I don't know, what's your capital outlay? Like, how much can you put in cash?
I could put in like 500 from the beginning, or even more.
Okay, let's not do that though. Let's buy a cheaper building first. Then you can show. I mean, if you do end up going the building route, just buy one building. I mean, of good quality and good profile and good location, but as cheap as you can get.
Yeah.
Then show them. Then it's generating income for a year or two or whatever. I mean, we can try and then try again, and then get them, because then if you do manage to get financing, then you could go beyond the 700, right?
That would be ideal. That's the plan, is to be able to get at least, you reckon I could probably get about 80% LTV?
It's 80%, but it's more of 80% of the official evaluation, not the market price. So that's usually a bit lower. It's more like 60, 70, I'd say.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's still good. That's still what's, it's not the worst, but it's not, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's still good. That's still good.
It's 2.5%. So definitely compare. I'm assuming your accent is Australian, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So definitely compared to what you'd get in Oz, it's a lot better, isn't it?
Right. You don't have tapes of, I guess I follow the Australian property market a bit, but it's a different game over there, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. The loans are different, but the yields are a lot lower. So.
Yeah. And everyone's just playing capital appreciation over there, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the government is sort of incentivized to make sure that people don't lose those capital gains.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here, the advantage here is that they're a lot slower to foreclose. They'll always try to avoid foreclosing, whereas banks in other countries are kind of looking forward to that.
Are they, do you follow the policy much?
Not official policy. I just see boots on the ground, what's happening.
Yeah. So you wouldn't know if they're intending to change any of their, because at the moment, like, they're very friendly towards housing affordability, aren't they?
Are you referring to Japan now or Australia?
Japan.
I don't think it's a policy. It's more a case of salaries haven't gone up, which means rents can't go up, right? We ourselves haven't raised rents on any of our, 300 plus doors now. I mean, us and our customers. We haven't been able to raise rents at all since we started, and that's been 12 years.
Wow.
The most we've raised the rent was maybe $20 a month in a super central location kind of thing, not beyond that. And when we did try beyond that, the tenant just upped and left because there was other comparable properties at similar rents or lower.
So you haven't seen any wage inflation over the last 2-3 years?
Not even close to the cost of living.
Jesus. Wow.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's A-K-I-Y-A-M-A-R-T, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
Okay, so we're either looking down the barrel of getting a cheap building to start with.
Yeah, so you've mentioned one of the assets would be for you and the family to live in?
We're on the fence about that. I mean, since that email, I've watched a lot of your videos and probably changed a bit of my, and probably learned, I've learned quite a lot from the videos that I've watched. And so I'm probably reckoning, I reckon maybe it might be better for us just to rent somewhere else that we want to live rather than trying to find a investment property that we want to make money off of but also live in.
Well, if you've been living and earning in Japan, then a home loan is kind of a no-brainer at what, 0.5% or less than 1% interest?
We wouldn't be able to get one. I'm on a dependent visa here, and my wife is on she's on a student visa.
Oh, sorry, I thought your spouse was Japanese. Gotcha.
No, she's Filipino. We've been here for about 5 years while she finishes her PhD.
Okay, so are you eligible for a PR at any point?
I don't know. I don't have a degree. I can speak, but I can't write. I don't think I'd meet any of the points requirements for a PR.
Well, in that case, even an investment loan is going to be a lot more challenging. What you'll need to do in that case, the only option I know of is for mansion units, you can get a loan from UOB in Singapore.
Oh.
And that'll be 3.5%, but they don't do landed property, so no buildings. Mm-hmm. Or you could use your company to, so how did you, I'm just curious, how did you set up the company and get the bank account without, you got residency, just not permanent residency.
I got a guy to set it up for me as the representative director, and then he'll sign me over as the representative director when it's all set up.
Okay, so you can do that sort of thing and apply for a loan with Shinsei Investment and Finance, which is a subsidiary of Shinsei Bank, mm-hmm. in which case you'll get 2.5%.
Okay. And that's like 1-2 years down the track anyway.
No, Shinsei, their product is geared towards non-residents, so that can probably be straight away.
And that's for a house that we'd be living in ourselves?
No, investment property only.
Really?
Yeah.
So just to clarify, you think the company or me as an individual can get a loan?
The company essentially, but of course they look at who the owner is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm mentioning Shinsei specifically because they don't care about residency. That's the only reason. Otherwise, the local banks will want to see that you're at least headed towards a PR, which maybe your wife, but maybe you can't show them, right?
I mean, I technically don't have any income in this country.
Okay, so, and she's studying, you said?
She gets paid like $3 million a year, but she isn't quote-unquote employed. That's just compensation.
Okay, yeah. So it'll have to be the company, and it'll have to be Shinsei Investment and Finance then. I don't know of any other solution.
Okay. All right. And they would, so they'd be able to give me a loan on buying somewhere, even as I was buying it, as a mortgage.
essentially strictly investment property. But if you did want to maybe like use 20 or 30% of the building to live in, I don't know of anyone that asked them about it. That might be an option. But basically, the product is investment properties only on long-term leases only. So no Airbnb or anything like that.
Okay, yeah.
But that, having said that, once the loan's been granted, I don't know that they'll check up on what you're doing with the units that much.
What are they going to do, right?
Oh, no, they could. I mean, if they find out, they could ask you to refinance or pay it off. But if you're renting it out, I'm just struggling to see how they'd find out, kind of thing.
Okay. That's
only if they try to send you a mail to your address and you've moved, or somebody actually goes and visits the property in person because they couldn't contact you or anything of that sort. But most of the time, that should not be an issue, I think. But in any case, you're planning kind of long-term pet-friendly leases. So the only thing to check with them would be whether it would be okay for you to use a small portion of the building to live in if you wanted to.
If I went down the building route,
But otherwise, just calculate it. See how much you're saving on rent versus how much that amount would make you on your money if you were to invest it in something, and just see if it's worth renting or not. It's usually more of a, I know for my wife, for example, that was a more of an emotional than a financial decision, but most of the guys I know are just looking at it from a numbers perspective and seeing if it's worth renting or buying.
Okay. Yeah, renting does make it a bit easier in the head, right? Because then it makes it a bit easier to look at the properties from purely a numbers perspective.
And also a lot easier to relocate if you want to, right?
Yeah. Like if we get somewhere, if we have to find somewhere that, like, you know, we also want to live in.
Yeah, I mean, if you're buying if you're buying in cash, it's not as attractive as buying with a, you know, close to 1% interest, because then that same amount that you've used to buy your property that you're living in, you could have invested in and getting maybe higher return than you're saving, right?
Could you say that all again? Sorry.
So if you're buying a property in cash, the thing I always look at is, if I wasn't buying this property in cash, what would I have done with that money? If I would have invested it and gotten 6% on my capital, then maybe that's comparable, maybe not, depending on how, you know, how fancy you like to live. But if, you know, if it's saving you 400,000 yen a month, then yes. But if you are happy living in, I don't know, 100, 120,000 yen a month apartment, then maybe you could get more than that if you would just to invest that money, right?
Okay. Something to think about, I guess.
But in any case, straight out home loan, I don't think is in the cards for you. So the only option to use the loan for a property that you could live in would be if Shinsei would approve you using a portion of the building for your own residence.
So that'd be a building with a bunch of units, and then one would be a nice family unit for me and my family.
Yes, or, you know, even if you can't find the perfect one, but there, if it's a wooden building, it's easy enough normally to just unite two smaller units into one, so you could kind of turn the top floor into a family-sized unit.
Okay, yeah, all right. And then I'd be able to get a loan against the whole building, right? Yeah,
but again, their product is geared towards strictly investment properties, so that'll be a conversation to have with them. I can put you in touch with some of the people that our customers have been talking to over there.
Okay. So that's one way. So that's one strategy, right? Buy a building, and live in. Get a full loan on the whole building and live in the top floor or something.
Yes. And Shinsei Investment and Finance, similar to UOB, will also lend you for mansion units.
Okay. Will Shinsei give me multiple loans for each unit that I buy?
Within whatever they gauge your borrowing capacity to be. But essentially, yes. I think their minimum per asset is 10 or 15 million yen, which is kind of what you're looking at anyway.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't probably be picking up anything lower than that.
I mean, just because you already have the company, so you're already paying the, I don't know, $2,000-$4,000 a year in company upkeep costs. So otherwise, I would say it maybe doesn't make sense, depending on how much you'll be making, to spend that much if you're not going to be making at least six times. But you already have the company, you're already paying the upkeep costs, so why not go for the cheaper interest, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So that's one route, and then the other route would be buying a portfolio of mansions, and you think that I would be able to get a portfolio of mansion units and a loan against all of them.
Yeah, so same two lenders. They'd be a bit more restrictive on locations. I think it's Tokyo within the Yamanote line, central Osaka, and just two of the most central wards in Fukuoka City. I don't know that they do any other cities.
With that, I'd probably just want to be targeting areas that I think young professionals would be living in and you know, who have a sort of in their 20s.
Well, if you're going with a loan, you always are limited by whatever the bank criteria specifies, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll just have to see what they'll let you buy. But from memory, it's central Tokyo, central Osaka, central Fukuoka only.
What is central? How far out is central Tokyo when you say central Tokyo?
Along the Yamanote line.
On the Yamanote line.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna have to pull up a map of that real quick.
It's the that roundabout train line that goes kind of the 23 central wards of Tokyo.
Yeah. Does that go out as far as let me pull up. Okay, that goes out as far as Shibuya.
It definitely that covers Shibuya and Shinjuku as well, yeah, but not maybe Yoyogi, I'm not sure.
Yeah, because I'd be wanting, because I don't know if I could get like cheap ones inside the Yamanote line. The ones that I'd be looking at if I was doing that would be a little bit outside, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but if you're getting a loan, then you don't need to get a cheaper one, right?
That's true. That is true. I don't need to, yeah, get a cheaper one.
Firstly, and secondly, if you want to, maybe maximize yield, then Osaka, Fukuoka are definitely options as well. They're both very good cities.
Okay. Yeah. Osaka Fukuoka.
That's if you go with Shinsei. With UOB, let me just have a quick look at the brochure. Give me a sec. So Shinsei definitely will also take. Sorry, my mistake. My mistake. Shinsei will also be okay with Chiba, Saitama, Kawasaki, Yokohama. So scratch that.
Oh, great. Yeah. So I can get
Osaka,
like.
they might go with Kobe. I'm not sure. We haven't asked them. And with UOB, let me just open the brochure. Tokyo, Yokohama, Osaka, Kyoto, and Fukuoka. Those are all the cities that we'd recommend shopping in anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the places that I'd have confidence in retaining value over the next 5, 10 years.
Yeah. And Kyoto would be tough to find. There's not that many properties that are not old townhouses available for sale in Kyoto. But the mansion rooms are definitely there.
Yeah, I reckon I'd probably want to. I think I do want to stick with just Tokyo area and live around that Tokyo area. Because then, if I like to be near. If I'm living there, I can get good at it. You know,
Yep.
I can figure out where's like a good deal, where's like a new station come popping up, and that sort of stuff. I could just look at it from a numbers perspective and just go for stuff in where I'm not living, but I'd fear that I wouldn't have any edge.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So, really, the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which, if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy. Fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc. You definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast.
Well, again, if we're going with a loan, then yield is not that much of a factor anyway, because you're looking at cash on cash yield and not absolute yield for the investment. You're looking at how much you put out of pocket, and for that yield would be higher than 6%. I would say, oh, central Tokyo maybe 6%, but other cities higher than that. So Chiba, Saitama, Yokohama, the places where we can get 6% in absolute loan yield value, for maybe double that cash on cash if you're looking at how much you're actually out of pocket.
What does cash on cash mean?
Cash on cash means the return that you're getting every month in your pocket compared to the actual amount of cash that you put into the deal. Right? So the 6% we've been discussing so far has been, okay, let's assume I'm paying everything in cash. How much do I get every year? Right? Cash on cash looks at how much you paid, how much was your participation in capital versus how much you get to keep in your pocket after the mortgage is paid at the end of the month.
Right, after the interest is paid from the mortgage.
Right, and because you're only paying, let's say you pay 30 to 40%, then that becomes a much higher yield that you're going to keep on an annual basis.
Yeah, then that starts going looking a bit more like Australian property investing or American property investing, right? Like how much can you get the bank to give you? How can you maximize the amount of money for the bank to give you, and how much?
Correct, but you're also, I mean, once you're taking out a loan, there's always, as remote as it might be, there's always the risk that the loan will be foreclosed for whatever reason, right? So you could potentially, if shit hits the fan, you could potentially have paid the loan for 5-10 years and then remain with nothing except whatever rental you were able to scrape off after the mortgage was paid because something happened.
Right. And wooden buildings, how do they go in an earthquake or a tsunami situation?
Huh? Oh, you're insured for that.
I'm insured for that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and with earthquakes, it's up to 50% of the official evaluation or of the price you've paid, which always differs a little bit from market price. So with earthquake specifically, you might get up to 60, 70% at most. All other disasters like fire and so forth are 100%.
Okay. Yeah, and that's interesting. So earthquake insurance doesn't pay the whole thing. It'll pay 50%.
Yeah, I guess because they're much more frequent in Japan compared to the other disasters, right?
That's true.
But having said that, we've been kind of lucky. We've only had a customer ever out of pocket about $500 with earthquakes. So, I mean, it's a crapshoot, basically. But fortunately, it hasn't happened to us yet.
They say it's due for one, though, don't they?
In Tokyo, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Another big one.
So what we've talked about, the directions we've talked about, which one do you reckon is better? Do you reckon buying a building and then just me and buying buildings, or buying apartments that I can rent out to young professionals?
Well, the apartments in your building you can rent out to young professionals too, right?
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, I kind of lean towards buildings for two reasons. One is the larger land plot, which is the only thing that stands to gain in value in Japan.
Right.
And the other thing is the flexibility that you have down the track. If you want to repurpose some of the units, do some more exciting stuff with them, just stuff that an owner union will not enable you to do.
Yeah. Okay.
But the downside to that is that all structural maintenance is on you. So something happens, you got to fork out the money to pay for it. There's no reserve funds or owner union maintaining the structure on your behalf and so forth.
Do sellers? Are there? I mean, I don't know how it is. Do you have bad builds in Japan?
Bad what? Sorry.
Bad builds. Like in Australia, there's a from what I've seen, there's a bit of a pandemic of bad builders and not building homes to spec and to standards, and then the owners, and then someone would sell that property to a potential buyer, and the buyer gets it and then finds out he's got to do all these fixes, right?
Not much of it here because they're a lot stricter on building approvals.
Yeah.
There have been a few scandals in the past, yeah.
And that scandals are probably televised and everything,
yes,
right?
Yeah, it's a very big deal when it happens here, unlike other countries.
So it's rare.
It is much rarer, yes.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Because I guess, all right, so it's not an adversarial market where you have to worry about whether or not the guy selling to you is fucking you over.
No, it's more a case of the builder might be overcharging compared to other developers.
Yeah. But you can then see, I mean, that's up to you, as the buyer, right? Whether or not you're getting a good deal or not. But he's not. It's rare for sellers to be trying to do it
over. No, that doesn't happen much here.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, that's good to know. Yeah. Okay. This has been very enlightening. I'm gonna keep watching a lot of your videos and keep learning them. But today's been very helpful.
Pleasure. Anytime. And if and when you want to start investigating the loans, let me know. I'll put you in touch with the guys from Shinsei and maybe with the guys from UOB in Singapore, just in case you want to look at that option.
Okay. I'd probably just stick with Shinsei. I don't know if I want to get into Singapore. Last question. How do you go about hunting for, if we start working together, how would you go about hunting for deals?
With us, it's a mix of listings that we get directly from agents that we've worked with in the past, and there's quite a few of those. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, then we'll be able to make an offer before they hit the open market in most cases, which just, you know, might get us away from the huge competition that happens when they do hit the MOS websites.
There is competition after they hit the websites, isn't there?
There is, yeah. And the cheaper they are, like for example with the mansions, they'll often be gone in a matter of days.
Yep. Yeah.
With buildings, they stay on the market a little bit longer, but if it's a good deal, it'll still not be more than a couple of weeks.
Okay. Yeah.
And the other part, if we can't find anything from those listings, then we just hit the normal websites like everybody else does.
So that's like Kenbia.
Kenbia and Rakumachi are the main ones for investment. Yeah.
Rakumachi and Kenbia. Okay. Do you have like any systems that are scraping those websites for new listings?
Do you have
any systems in place to scrape those websites? Do you have any automated processes?
Oh, okay, gotcha. Not that I'm aware of. One of our customers is actually playing with that now for Akia, and I think the next phase that he was planning is to do the same thing for investment properties. So we'll be interested in seeing if anything like that comes up.
Okay, because I was thinking of doing something like that as well, just scraping them quite regularly.
Scraping and translating would be a handy tool for foreign investors.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they'd still need, in most cases, they'd still need somebody like us to actually start conducting negotiations and due diligence and so forth, but at least they'll be able to do the research on their own.
Yeah, well, yeah, they'll be able to do their research and then you'll be able to get them across the line, wouldn't you?
Mm.
Okay. And do you know that guy that you mentioned? When did he say that he was working on that?
I think the Akia platform is kind of already out there in testing with some selected partnerships. I don't think he's worked on the investment side of it yet, but I'm guessing the mechanism will be very, very similar. So once that product is officially launched, I don't think it'll take him that long to convert it.
Has he been working on it for a long time?
I have no idea, but the world's abundant, man. I wouldn't worry about competition. There's always room for more.
That's true. I just get a bit paranoid when I talk about software. Okay. Cool. Well, thanks for the chat. I'll have a bit more of a look at It's interesting that you've the stuff you've told me has been pretty interesting. I'll keep looking at through your content. It's been very helpful. And have a bit of a talk to the wife, and then maybe in the future we can come together and start finding somewhere for me to buy.
Yep, happy to. We're here. Just reach out.
Cool. Thank you very much for your time today, then.
Pleasure. Speak to you soon.
All right, see ya.
Bye. So there you have it. Again, great conversation with a savvy investor who I'm sure will be doing very well if he hasn't started already. I would love to hear from your own experience if you've got some investment properties that cater to specific types of tenants like foreigners, pet owners, disabled folks, or anyone else. Feel free to add your feedback in the comment section. I would love to hear from you. And again, huge thank you for everyone who made last week's event such a roaring success. My partners in crime, the amazing audio video team, event organizer, and staffers who made everything run so smoothly on the day. But most of all, to you, the participants. Nothing gives us more pleasure than to see and hear how much value you gain from these sessions. You're the reason we get out of bed in the morning, no joke. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.